Victoria for all those in navy blue.
Yeah, the regular season is done and dusted in the A-League. Time to review all of that on the Fox Sports Football podcast. Apologies for the Monday show being a day late, but trips back from Perth have delayed us 24 hours and also accounted, well, a trip to Perth has accounted for a slightly different setup on the podcast today. We'll get to that in a moment, but Bruce Chatay has joined me in the studio. Hello, Brucey.
Hey, Garvey. How you going, mate?
Good, mate. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Good. We've got to talk about your life and times. You had a big announcement to make last week. We'll get onto that in a moment. But I said you'd join me in the studio because Simon Hill is on the phone. I came back from Perth last night. Simon Hill is off to Perth this morning for their Most Glorious Player Awards. Simon, hello to you, pal.
Good to be with you guys. I'm taking the Daniel Gard Memorial Suite when I land in Perth.
Mate, you're off there for the Most Glorious Player Awards. Now, let's get straight into it because I was talking to Bruce about this off air a moment ago. I, for one, don't understand why clubs are all having their Player of the Year awards with the finals still to go. The Glory have got their two biggest games of the season to come. They're going to announce their Player of the Year tonight.
I know. I don't get it either. I think the Wanderers have their best player award tonight as well. So, but of course, their season is finished. Sorry, Wanderers fans. But it seems a bit odd, but maybe it's to do with holidays and, you know, players dispersing as soon as the finals are over. And obviously, you know, you don't strictly know when the end of the season will be in the finals, do you, I suppose? Because if you lose in the first week, then you've got a pretty damp squib of an awards night, I suppose.
Surely you plan, though, Bruce, to make the finals.
You plan to make the finals. I mean, Adelaide United, we always had this problem, if you like. You know, especially for the foreign players. You know, they've been away from their friends and families for extended periods of the year and they want to shoot back home, understandably, when all the hard work and the season's done. I think not knowing when you're going to get knocked out in the finals and all that makes it very difficult to plan, book flights and all the rest of it. Your leases, everything that's organised around the season. So, look, I'm a fan of having it at the end of the regular season,
okay,
because the finals, you just never know. I mean, at Adelaide United, we'd always have it after the grand final, you know?
Yeah.
And if you got knocked out in the elimination final or the prelim, it's very frustrating to be there for 10, 12 days twiddling your thumbs, waiting for the awards night. Yeah.
I understand that.
Did you win it, Brucey? Did you win it a couple of times? I think you did, didn't you?
Oh, we got to the... we won it once.
So did you win...
win the Player of the Year?
Oh, the Player of the Year. Nah, yeah. Golden Boot and Best Clubman,
I think. Best Clubman, right. So you're a sucker?
No. I'm a helper. I'm a helper of people.
What up, he's mate? A lover. He's a lover, not a fighter.
But if you like, let's say if you're Neil Kilkenny or Shane Lowry or Diego Castro or Chris Economides and you lose by like two votes tonight and you have two massive games in the finals.
But I don't think the finals are calculated in the,
they're
in
not.
The points.
I just think they should.
Best person in the 27 game season.
Anyway. Simon's off there for the Most Glorious Player Awards tonight. Who do you think will take it out for the Premier, Simon?
Well, my pick would be Chris Economides, to be honest. Mm. I think he's had a terrific season. You can obviously make a case for Andy Keogh. I think Neil Kilkenny has had a fantastic comeback. I keep banging on about Killer, don't I, these last couple of weeks, but I reiterate that. I have a suspicion that Diego Castro might win it, but that's with no inside information, by the way. I think any one of those would be worthy winners. And, you know, you can make a case for some of the players that probably haven't had the headlines, like Liam Reddy, who's kept 11 clean sheets, or is it 12 now? I forget, after the 5-0 against Wellington. And also Shane Lowry, I think, has had a very good season as well. So, you know, I mean, Glory in general have had a terrific campaign and everybody's contributed.
Shane Lowry won it last year. He might figure again for the Glory. Bruce, you made a very big announcement last week that you're retiring from football. Just talk us through the decision-making process and how it's been over the last week, because the tributes, justifiably so, have been flowing.
Yeah, so I think it's more of a process than a instantaneous decision, something I've been thinking about for obviously a while. And, you know, to be a professional footballer, to be an elite sports person in any field, you really need to have that burning desire to go to training every day, be your best, love playing, love the responsibility that comes with the lifestyle and all the rest of it. But over the last year or so, I've felt that starting to wane a little bit. No idea why, you know. Yeah. Just happen naturally, I guess. And look, I got other interests. I'm interested in doing other things. And, you know, those other interests became more and more important to me.
Go on. I was going to ask a question. Sorry to interrupt, Bruce. I thought you'd finished. It's a bit difficult when you're remote. I just want to ask a question. So you're what? You're 31,
32.
32, which is still quite young as from a footballer's point of view. You know, most retire 34, 35, maybe a bit later these days. The old saying is you're a long time retired. Do you think you might regret this in a couple of years' time?
Look, and that's why I say it's a process. It's not a decision you can just make straight away. I mean, physically, I always felt like I could play another 2 years. Initially, I always had the thought of, you know, signing a 2 year deal from sort of now, but I don't want to. it's pretty clear. I mean, yeah, exactly. So I could have done it, but I would have been the guy in the change room, and I've seen him through a heap of change rooms. You know, you're on the downhill slope. You know, you're trying to set yourself up for what comes next, and football doesn't become a side gig, but it just becomes something to get you through those next 2 years because you haven't prepared as well as you should have, and you know, you're not performing to the level. You always get a bunch of these players every A-League season, right? Guys that probably should have hung up the boots a year earlier, but are just hanging on, and you know, they don't know what they're going to do next and all that sort of stuff. So I've always had in my mind ideas of what I want to do next, and there's so much more than football out there. I mean, obviously I'd love to stay involved in the sport, definitely. But, yeah, I just think I can add greater value. I think I'm a better asset in a non-playing capacity.
You're an asset. Will you play NPL?
No chance. No? Mate, my phone. So, like, you know what? It was funny when it became public. There were two approaches. You know, a lot of people that I'd played with or come across all around the world throughout my career, sending really nice tributes and messages to me. A lot that I didn't really expect. So that was very humbling. And then on the other side, you had people saying, "Oh, so you know, NPL 2 or NPL this or NPL that," and I'm thinking, why in God's name do you think I'd bother to play that? Like, with all due respect to NPL, but it's not about playing A-League, playing NPL, playing in China, playing Korea, it's not about location or club. It's about, I actually don't want to kick a ball. Give me a year just to not do anything, and then maybe I'll get back into it, but probably just with mates. Like an indoor five-a-side or something like that. I'm not playing for money. I'm not playing for, you know, we want to win this trophy or something. No. Been there, done that. I'm not. That's what I'm saying. That desire's gone. You know what I mean?
Imagine the opposition five-a-side team. They roll up on a Tuesday night. They've just finished work, put the kids to sleep, had their dinner, and Bruce Chatea rocks up to play against them.
I mean, early, I think so. But, you know, there's a lot more to me than being a footballer.
Bruce, you've had a wonderful career, and we take our hat off to you. Congratulations on your contribution to the game. On the field, off the field, it feels like there might be a lot more to give. We're loving it in a media sense right now, but, yeah, listening to you talk, there could be, a position for you off the field. Running the game one day. Running the country, maybe, as some people have said, which would be wonderful. A big show coming up, but we'll go through the A-League.
Sorry. Obviously. Can I ask one more question of Brucey, which we haven't asked him yet? Pick out a highlight for us, Bruce, if we've got time. The highlight of your career.
Yeah, it'd be there's two. It'd be my time with the national team and winning that grand final with Adelaide in Adelaide.
They're
clear, yeah.
Two standouts. Fantastic, mate. We'll go through the A-League. We'll look at our teams of the season as well. So we'll name our A-League 11s from the regular season, and obviously plenty to look at from the Premier League. A lot of big talking points from abroad and your Twitter questions, some really good ones this week. But let's look at the A-League, the final round from the weekend.
Lasting damage. Perth wasting no time to get on the attack. Franish cuts it back. Castro! Easy as you like for Diego. Movement. Franish is forwards. The run of Keogh creates the space for Castro.
So Perth belted Wellington, basically, and knocked Wellington down to sixth on the ladder. And that means it's the victory against the Phoenix in the first elimination final on Friday night. Adelaide against Melbourne City on Sunday night, live and exclusive on Fox Sports. Of course, boys, what do we make of the Wellington Phoenix approach? I mean, the Glory, as we know on their day, are rampant and can put anyone to the sword. But by gee, the Phoenix made it easy for them, didn't they, Simon? I mean, they left out arguably the player of the season, you know, in the A-League, although Diego Castro has won the Tobin medal. He might win the Johnny Warren medal in Roy Krishna. Philip Curto has been arguably the keeper of the season. Got a feeling he'll figure prominently in our teams of the year coming up. Max Burgess has been a revelation. Andrew Durante, okay, that made sense. One more yellow card and he was suspended, but he was left out. He basically allowed for this to happen, Mark Rudin. What do we make of it?
He did in many ways, although that's to take nothing away from Perth, who were as good as they've been all season and really just, as you say, put them to the sword. But I think in some ways you can understand the logic behind it, or at least some of it. He wanted to rest some of those players as well as protect Durante. And I think the travel probably had an awful lot to do with it. I mean, that journey to Perth obviously is their longest of the season. They're going to have to back up on the road in just a few days' time, whether it was Adelaide or Melbourne. I don't think it really mattered. They're both tough away games. So, you know, Rudan made a big call. It is a big call. I would say that victory away is the tougher of the two. But maybe he thought, look, you know, even if I put my full strength team out, there is still no guarantee that we're going to get the result, particularly on the back of Melbourne City's hammering of the Mariners. Mm. You know, a two-goal margin of victory was always likely. So if you're going to lose 2-0, well, you know, you may as well lose 3-4-0. Now, I'm not saying that they threw the towel in and didn't try. I think that's far from the truth. But I think it was a matter of expediency for Rudan, and we'll see if that gamble pays off. And, you know, it was going to be tough for them anyway on the road to victory or Adelaide. Let's see if him resting those key players pays off next week.
Yeah, I mean, they did try it. David Williams tried it right wing back, but I felt sorry for your old mate. He's had such a good season. He's no wing back. It's such a tough position to play when you're turning every 2 seconds because Chris Economides is smashing you down the line. Geez, it makes for a tough afternoon, which it was for him in Perth. But what sort of damage can that do to a squad potentially? Like, I agree, that was Rudin's approach. They fancy themselves against Melbourne. So he probably thought, I don't mind if it's Melbourne or Adelaide. I'm better off resting players. Whatever happens, happens, because for me, it's the same situation for us and we can knock off the victory in their mind as easily as Adelaide. But what can that do to a playing squad a week before the finals when you get pumped 5-0?
Yeah, look, if I was Rudes, I wouldn't even have brought him. I would have left, like, he still brought Krishna to Perth, right? They still played 30-odd minutes.
That's because they're staying in Australia together as a group. They're going straight to Melbourne now.
I get that, but send them straight to Melbourne and say, just wait here. But anyway, look, I don't think it's too much damage. I think your key players that are going to make or sort of break the game for you aren't scarred by this. They're not psychologically scarred. Krishna doesn't care. Okay. I mean, he played 30 minutes. It was already 4-0 or 3-0 at the time or whatever. He, you know, it's not hard for him to think back to scoring a hat-trick just a fortnight ago and still being uber confident and thinking that he can be the match winner. I think they prefer to play victory. I think as a club, I can't remember the last time they beat Adelaide in Adelaide. They always seem to play quite well against victory. And even though victory in Melbourne especially, and even though they haven't won that many games there, there's many games there that they should have done better. So, I don't know if it's their preference to play victory. They obviously don't care who they play. But, I'd give Wellington personally a better chance of beating victory in Melbourne than I would have beating Adelaide in Cooper Stadium there.
Yeah. The big names for the Glory, you know, ran rampant. Castro, Keogh, Economides. When those three get going, and Jason Davidson was fantastic as well, but when those three get going, it really is a joy to watch. And wasn't the biggest crowd in Perth, but it was a wonderful vibe as the Glory basically had a night out. City did the same against Central Coast, Simon, which I warned you might happen. You said it wouldn't, and then I backpedaled and said, yeah, right, I agree with you. They won't smash the Mariners, and they did 5-0. So that was the other side of the equation. Shane Harrison, geez, he's looking a player. You just get the the feeling, with him up and going, they might be able to take a big scalp come finals. What do you think?
Well, just hang on here. What we've learned about City this season is that one week they look like world beaters and yep. the next they drop their level twofold. And, you know, you think, well, what's happened to them? It was a very good performance on Friday night. There's no question about that. Helped, strangely enough, by the fact that Warren Joyce left out a lot of his, you know, senior stars, if you like, and gave some of the kids a chance. And weren't they a delight to watch, some of those? Rami Nazarene and Idris Abdullahi. Conor Metcalf, I thought, was superb when he came off the bench. So they've got to be pushing now for selection. We must also say in mitigation that the Mariners were horrible.
They had their mad Monday
on holiday. So you know that's a caveat to that. But it looks City have got a chance. There's no doubt about that. They've not lost to Adelaide in any of the three meetings during the regular season. So that I think they will go there with confidence. It's really just a matter of, you know, what version of City actually shows up. I'm pretty sure that Jamie McLaren, Eugene Galekovic, maybe Rostin Griffiths, you know, some of the others, the senior players, they'll all be back. Richie Delatt, Harrison Delbridge are both rested because they were on seven yellows as well. So I think Warren Joyce has got quite a nice little selection conundrum, and the kids have given him that by their performance on Friday night. But, you know, will they go to Adelaide and win? Let's just see on Sunday, because we just never know what version of City is going to show up.
Fascinating game with that in mind. I mean, you look at it now and you just go, it can go either way easily. Whereas, you know, Phoenix can win, but you favour victory strongly on Friday.
That's right. Mm. I think the City-Adelaide game is very 50-50. City probably have the better players individually.
Yeah.
Adelaide as a collective have shown throughout the season that they're a very, very strong team. They know how to win the finals games. They won the FFA Cup. But look, I think, you know, it's very hard to gauge the performance when they're up against such poor opposition. Yeah. You know, it's like when you play pre-season games against the NPL teams and you're winning, you know, 5-6-0, and then the A-League comes around and you get smashed in the first round. And
fair analogy.
Like, I thought we were doing really, really well. So it's hard to gauge with all due respect. I mean, look, Stadge knows he needs to rebuild that team. They're just not up to scratch. And they came up against a City team that's got tremendous depth. I mean, some of those young players could start in a lot of other teams. I mean, definitely the Mariners were thinking, geez, I wish we had some of these guys. Right. I mean, they let Lachlan Hales go and look how good he is. So, look, I think it'll be an interesting game at Cooper Stadium. I wouldn't want to be having to make a tip. But look, last time we played City there, we demolished them. So hopefully Adelaide United can do it again.
If you're a betting man, it's the kind of game you look at and go, nah, I'm staying away from that one.
Yeah, exactly
it's
right.
It's too hard to pick. Simon, it just makes you wonder why they haven't played the kids more often. We've banged on about it all season. We don't need to again. But Shane Harrison, we have spoken about that and the theory behind bringing him in from Spurs when he's not even connected to the City group. And I think those arguments are well and truly justified, and I stand by them. But if he goes and wins them a big final and gets them to a grand final, then you have to stand back and go, you know what? They were right, because he has led to a big moment for him.
Well, he has, and his level has improved, you know, markedly since he arrived, and now he's starting to find the back of the net. He's got a very sweet left foot, there's no doubt about that, particularly when he cuts in from the right. His two finishes against the Mariners were top draw, and he can be a real weapon, you know, along with Jamie McLaren, who we know will always score goals at A-League level. So, you know, there's no question that City have got the players. The other player I thought played very well on Friday that we've not mentioned is Riley McGree. And I know that you've been a big advocate of him having much more game time during the season. Quite why he's not started so many games, I've no idea, to be honest. But he was very good at the weekend. City have got almost two players for every single position. They probably got, you know, along with the top two or three, the best squad depth in the competition. But for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to find that consistency. They could go on and win this. I'm not just talking about on Sunday. They could win the whole thing quite easily. By a similar token, they could lose 3 or 4 nil on Sunday.
And the word is Warren Joyce, regardless of what happens. My understanding is that they're leaning towards giving him a year extension. So we'll wait and see. That's the word I'm hearing. They've got a big game coming up on Sunday. The victory in Sydney FC, where are they at for you guys. Kevin Muscat said after the 1-0 win over Western Sydney, as it stands right now, we're not going to be able to repeat what we did last year, which is winning it from outside the top two. But things can change very quickly. Sydney FC have a week off, but Ryan Grant has a race against time now to be fit after that hamstring injury. Where are the two big dogs, if you like, or the big clubs of the competition sitting ahead of the finals?
Look, for me, I think Victory have big game players. You know, the Victory you see that's guaranteed to finish third, playing against a team that can't make the finals, in a stadium with barely anybody there, and the Victory you're going to see at home in a finals game, they're the holders. They're defending this trophy. Is going to be yin and yang. I mean, I don't know if Troisi gets up for the game with his hamstring problem, but they got enough depth and they got those big game players. So I think Victory in a dead rubber and Victory in a finals game, two completely different propositions. With Sydney FC, obviously Ryan Grant, massive race against time. They should probably get Zulo back, though, which is a big boost for the squad. And look, they know how to win things. They're a team that I'd expect to win that game in a fortnight's time. So if I was Kevin Muscat or Stevie Corica, I'm not too concerned at all. I've got, you know, trust in my players that in the big moments they're gonna step up because they know what's needed.
I think for me, the key really to this whole final series is that Sydney Victory game. If that's not being disrespectful to Wellington, but assuming that you know, Victory do the job on Friday night at Amy Park, then they've got to travel to Sydney again, same as they did last season in the semi-final. That is going to be one hell of a game. Sydney, of course, will be out for revenge. They haven't won the premiership this time. As they did last time. Everybody expected them to go on and win it. There's not quite the same psychological edge between Steve Corica and Kevin Muscat. I think that was a big part in last year's semi where I think Arnie said one or two things and Muscat used that as motivation. But even so, I agree with Bruce. Victory have got big game players, Honda, Toivonen. And, you know, in some ways they showed that against the Wanderers, even though it was a bit of a dead rubber of a game at the weekend. They grounded out. So they weren't necessarily at their absolute best, but they played some good football, particularly first half. And when they needed to dig in, they did so. They know how to win these trophies. So I wouldn't be backing against Victory at all.
Wonderful header from Toivonen. Wasn't that a joy to watch? I mean, that was just top-class football.
What a goal. And what a cross as well from Tommy Deng, who had a really interesting first half. He had a yellow card, an assist, and then he got a bake from Kevin Muscat, who threatened to take him off with Storm warming up, and he did eventually. So, but you know, I think that's been the difference late season for Victory. If you remember, they fell in a little bit of a hole. I think they went four or five games without a win. And Muskie put a rocket up one or two, including Lawrence Thomas between the posts. You know, he dropped Storm Rue, he dropped Corey Brown, he shifted things around. And I think he's just, you know, refound that little mental edge amongst his squad, maybe giving them a bit of a serve and said, look, you're not as good as you think you are. And, you know, your places aren't guaranteed. And that's good management.
The Ryan Grant injury, I mean, look, Sydney fans will sit there and say, why play Ryan Grant? But you got to play your big guns. You got to play a number of them, right? So if it happened to Grant or O'Neill or Ninkovic or Lafondra, you'd be making the exact same argument. So you have sympathy with Steve Corica. He couldn't send a bunch of kids out there. The squads aren't big enough. He still wanted to keep some guys in form. So it's just the way it goes, unfortunately. Hopefully Ryan Grant is fit for that semi-final in a couple weeks' time. A wonderful Anzac Day tribute on Thursday, I thought. We're going back a fair few days now, but, you know, we've got wonderful stories in football. And I thought that pre-game show on Fox was just fantastic, having Gary Wilkins there from the Brisbane Roar, who's been to Vietnam, and the stories he told Luke Devere with his granddad. It was just fantastic the way that it was done. And Robbie Fowler was there amongst it all, Simon, as Adelaide put five in the back of the net. Everything's been said about Fowler that needs to be said, but what does he need to focus on now? Let's take it forward a bit. What is the main focus for Robbie Fowler at that football club?
Well, let's be honest, they've just conceded 10 goals in two home matches. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that he needs to sort out that defence. I think if you look at the template that's been put down by Tony Popovich, you know, Perth conceded, what was it, 50-odd goals last season. This year it's 23. And look at the difference in their league placings. So I think he'll build from the back. At least I would expect him to, because he needs better players back there, and he needs to galvanise the whole joint. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, Brisbane look to be a club that's got their chin on the floor at the moment. You know, they can still score a few goals here, and I think there are positives. The emergence of some of the young players like Dylan Wenzel-Halls or Denzel Wells, as Bozza calls him, this season. You know, there are some positives, but they've been massively outweighed, obviously, by the fact that they've just had a horrible, horrible season. And I think also, you know, you look at a lot of those players, and all right, Matty Mackay's retired. I'm pretty sure a lot of them will be moved on, but they were an old squad. I mean, they were an older squad last year. I still think that they, you know, the squad this season was probably just a little bit too on the older edge. And as Brucey said earlier on in the podcast, you know, maybe one or two played a season too long.
Yep. Well, Robbie Fowler was being unveiled in Brisbane. John Aloisi was being celebrated at Osasuna, which was great to see, an Aussie in La Liga, basically having a fan group chanting for him. For me, it's because it happened during the Golden Generation days. It's one of the stories of an Aussie abroad that maybe hasn't been celebrated enough because we had so many big names then, but there hasn't been an Aussie to play in La Liga and do well since, and Johnny's the only one. It was great to see that. But, you know, he's left Brisbane. Robbie Fowler's come in. It's a huge task, of course. It's a gamble. I don't mind that. Brisbane have basically said, they'll say behind closed doors, we've rolled the dice. It's high risk, but, geez, the reward is enormous if it pays off.
I think
Bruce, you know, the thing with Fowler that I've thought over the last few days, look, I understand that people are questioning his lack of top flight experience, but remember Josip Gombo when he came in? I mean, he'd won the title in Hong Kong, but with the greatest respect to Hong Kong, you know, that wasn't the highest level. But everybody got a little bit excited because, of course, he coached kids at Barcelona. Now, you know, Robbie's been coaching kids at Liverpool, an equally big club. He's had a very short stint with Mung Tong United, which by all accounts wasn't hugely successful. But, you know, he's their choice. So let's give him a chance. If he's poor, no problem. Smash him. But he's not coached a game yet.
I think a lot of people are giving him a chance. I think the other side of the argument is, why hasn't he coached yet? And I'll defend Robbie Fowler on this. England, as you know, Simon, can be very fickle. It can be a really fickle place when it comes to coaching. What happens when a job becomes available at the bottom end of the Premier League or in the Championship? It's the same names that get brought up. Alan Pardew, Steve McClaren, Sam Allardyce, Harry Redknapp still, this one, that one. If you fall off that wagon of coaches in the mix, it's very hard to get back on. I mean, we would love to have seen a Tony Popovich or an Ange Postecoglou get a chance. We know they would have done well in that environment. That just seems like a pipe dream now. They've got to go through the back door, really, and prove themselves in other leagues before they get that chance.
But you know why that is garbage.
Yeah,
you know why that is. And that's because the financial penalties for getting relegated out of the Premier League. And you know, people like Pardew and Allardyce in particular, Redknapp to a large degree, you know, they've got proven pedigree at saving clubs from relegation. That's why that next tier of coaches, I'm not saying it's right, but it's the reason. That's why they don't get an opportunity, or very rarely.
I get that, but clubs can be fickle. And who knows why Robbie Fowler hasn't got an opportunity there. Maybe he waited too long. Maybe he decided for the first 2-3 years, I want to see what happens. Maybe he had one bad interview and the word spreads amongst clubs, Robbie Fowler's not up to it. Maybe there was a job he didn't fancy and they say Robbie Fowler's not committed. Things can spread like that and the narrative can become a little bit skewed. I'm not saying that's accurate, but I know that it can be really fickle over there. So I'm not sure we should read too much into that. He's got a chance here. He loves it here, so he's happy to come here. Hopefully he goes well at Brisbane. Of course,
what's your take on it, Bruce?
Look, I think, you know, he's been here as a player, so he understands the A-League. I think that's a massive plus. And I just think people are discounting a bit too much how much he would have learned of some of the managers he's been managed by. I mean, you can just come from the side of the street and be whoever you want and go and get your C, B, A and pro license. Anyone can do it. It's a commitment, of course, but everything in life's a commitment, right? But do you have that same knowledge that has been passed down? Do you have that experience? I mean, that was the difference between Gombau and Amor. The difference between Gombau and why we didn't win it under him and why we won it under Amor is because Amor was so calm. He knew what was required in these big games. Grand final was like water off a duck's back to this guy. Josep Gombau wore his heart on his sleeve. You know, you'd score, he'd run and celebrate with you. So in those big games, nerves that he had, or, you know, the pressure that he felt, or responsibility, or whatever you want to call it, also rubs off on the squad a bit. You know,
Dia Moore was the coolest man alive.
Coolest man alive.
Never got flustered.
I mean, never got flustered. And you know what? We, for not one second, got concerned in that grand final, or were nervous, or anything, because of the way he spoke, the way he prepared us throughout the week. And he would have learned that, one, from his experiences, and two, from the coaches that he'd had. Mm. I mean, how learning off Cruyff or doing a pro license, what would you rather do? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Anyone can read a book and get good all the points. Content knowledge that you like. I mean, in Australia, everyone's complaining about the administrators of this game don't have any contextual knowledge of the game. Mm. Yeah, they're smart and they got all the content knowledge. And now we've got a coach with all that, like all the experience. And now we're saying, he's never coached before. He's never done this, never done. Everyone will always try to pick a hole in any argument. I'm happy for him to have a chance.
Wonderful insight, Brucey. All right, let's rip into our teams of the season. Let's get straight into it. I've given you the challenge, you two, and I've named my 11 as well, to name your first 11s from the regular season. Simon, you can share it with everyone there in the Qantas Lounge, your first 11 from the A-League this season.
I did text this to you, and I haven't actually got it in front of me. So I hope you have.
I do.
I'll try and remember it.
Okay. I've got it in front of me, so I'll read out your 11.
Okay, go on then.
Simon Hill has gone for Philip Curto in goals, a back four of Ryan Grant, Bart Schenkeveld, Shane Lowry, Jason Davidson, Kilkenny and O'Neill in front of them, and then Economides on one wing, Barbaroussis on another wing. Terry Antonis is the number 10. Terry Antonis, interesting. Ooh. The number 10 in between those two. And Roy Krishna as the lone striker. So that is Simon Hill's first 11. Antonis, the one that some people might say interesting, but the rest of it, yeah, I think, is pretty spot on. And Barbaroussis, another one who's edged out someone like Diego Castro, our Alex Tobin medalist, on the bench for Simon Hill.
Yeah, I know. It's controversial, but that's the way I like to be. I just think, I mean, Castro's had a very good season. There's no doubt about that. But he has had sort of one or two little periods out with an injury, and he's also been used, I wouldn't say sparingly, by Tony Popovich, but he's been rotated in and out once or twice. And I just think Terry Antonis has had an excellent season. And so too has Costa Barbaroussis. Mm. I mean, you know, 14 goals in a position that was unfamiliar to him at the start of the campaign. And he didn't score, remember, until December, which I suppose in some people's eyes should rule him out of being in my best 11. But I just think he's had a sensational season. I could have made a case for so many. You know, Honda, Toivonen as well, Adam Lafondra is unlucky. I put all those players on the bench, by the way.
19-man bench.
an extended bench. But, you know, you can only pick 11. And, the only other sort of area I had a little bit of trouble with was a central defensive partner for Shane Lowry. And I plumped for Bart Schenkeveld in the end because I just think he's an outstanding defender. I was struggling to pick a partner for Lowry. I was thinking about Niedermeyer, but, you know, he's had a bit of time on the sidelines as well. It's not an easy choice, is it? And Ivan Franić is stiff as well for not getting in a right back. But I just think Ryan Grant's been outstanding.
Brucey?
I've gone with Curto in goals.
Yep.
Ryan Grant at right back. He's a lock. I've gone for Schenkeveld and Wilkinson in the centre back pairing. Yeah, Davidson as a left back. Yeah. Isaias and Kilkenny holding midfielders in front of them. Castro as my number 10. Economides on the left. Krishna number 9. And Barbaroussis on the right.
Barbaroussis
We're not too different then, Roy.
Not too different. I mean, I was tossing up big time between Barbaroussis and Lafondra. I had to juggle with my formation a bit, but I've stuck with a 4-3-3 there. And look, I just think...
Very curriculum friendly.
Well, you know, I've been reading those books, you know.
I like it. I guess Isaias is the little bolter for you.
Yeah,
you like,
I think
he's the season.
I just think he's phenomenal. I think he's the best midfielder in the league in that position. I think he's better than O'Neill and Berlante. I just think he is on another level. I mean, and then... He's not in a Sydney FC or a Melbourne Victory. He's not in one of these teams that's full of stars, you know. So it just adds, I think, to the work he does and to the value that he brings to that team. So Issa's in there, has to be Kilkenny by his side. And, you know, I'd love to see that team playing the Asian Champions League. I think they'd go quite a way.
I reckon Mighty 11, my 11 might knock yours off though, Brucey. They're very similar. They're very similar.
Who is it?
Very similar to Simon's as well. We've all gone for Philip Curto in goals. I've gone for him as well. My back four is exactly the same as Simon's, actually. People will think I've copied him because he texted me his. I promise you I didn't. But I've gone for Ryan Grant, Bart Schenkerbelt. Shane Lowry, for me, is a lock. I think he's been the best central defender all season. And then Jason Davidson as well at left back. And I've gone for the same two central midfielders as Simon, Neil Kilkenny and Brandon O'Neill. I think O'Neill's been... That's one position that was a little bit open for me. I can see why you've gone for SAS. I think Brandon O'Neill's been hugely underrated this season. He's been super consistent. He's gone past Josh Brolante. They've been a combination for a number of years. I think O'Neill's left him in his wake this season, and he's really led the way in the centre of the park. Diego Castro in front of them as the attacking midfielder. And then I've gone for a front three. Krishna playing off the wing where he can obviously do his job. Chris Economides playing off the left. And I've gone for Adam Lafonda as the lead striker.
Okay.
I think he's had a wonderful season. You know, he scored lots of goals, but even without scoring goals, I think he's had games where he's just worked so damn hard that he's led the way for that team. I think he could easily win Sydney's player of the season. O'Neill, Ninkovic, Grant will all be up there. I think Lafondra will figure prominently.
I'd agree.
Fair call, Garby. Good team.
All right.
We're not that far different, are we, all three?
No. We're not. I've left out Barbarouses from mine. You've both gone for him. And then there's a few other positions that have been changed. But the bulk of the squad is pretty much the same. So there's obviously been some standout players throughout the campaign. All right. Castro wins the Alex Tobin medal. That was basically nailed on once Roy Krishna was left on the bench. We'll wait and see what happens with the Johnny Warren. Krishna could certainly figure prominently in that one. One final one before we go. Archie Fraser named as the CEO of Southwest Sydney MacArthur. I did say, looking at that club, they needed a strong CEO. I said that on the podcast a few weeks ago. They've got a man who's got a lot of experience, former head of the A-League, strong personality. But interesting, Simon, that he's been a major dissenter of the FFA in recent times.
Well, that's no bad thing, in my opinion. That's nothing against the FFA, but I think you need strong views, strong opinions. Sometimes in our game, we're not allowed to have those, as we well know. Archie certainly won't take a backward step. There's a big job to do, Southwest Sydney. A lot of work to build a new club, which sort of encroaches on some of the areas of the Wanderers. They've got a big fight on their hands to get, a large fan base that's going to be identified with this club. And I think Archie's a good choice. He'll probably annoy one or two people. And would you believe, as I say, that Greg O'Rourke wanders by me in the Qantas lounge?
Brilliant.
How appreciative is that?
Brilliant.
You're talking about Archie Fraser, Greg. He just rang me, says Greg.
This football universe is very small. Mouth.
We're on the podcast, Greg. Yes. Archie Fraser has just been appointed the CEO. What did your conversation consist of this morning?
Well, he wanted to introduce himself and tell me that he only had positive intentions for the game. He looked forward to working with me.
There we go.
Fantastic.
Straight from Greg O'Rourke. I bring you exclusives every day.
Hello, Gregor. That's fantastic. Where's Mr. O'Rourke off to?
Where are you heading to, Greg? No, I'm going to Perth. You're going to Adelaide, are you? All right.
Brilliant.
So travels.
Asking me,
to Adelaide.
Ask me if you slept last night after the Melbourne Derby got scrapped off from the first week of the finals.
He's disappeared into the lounge. I've lost him. So there you go. Yeah, I think it's an interesting choice, and I think it's a good one.
Wonderful. All right, let's get overseas. There is plenty to digest from the Premier League as our starting point. Yeah, wonderful to have Greg O'Rourke join us on the Fox Football Podcast. Let's talk a bit of Premier League, though. City scraped past Burnley, and I mean scraped literally. It was a matter of millimetres that got them the 1-0 win, although they probably deserved it. There was a nailed-on penalty that should have been awarded moments before from a handball from Ashley Barnes, and they absolutely pummeled Burnley in terms of possession, although Burnley did everything they could to try and keep City out of it. Liverpool fans can't complain about the Burnley approach. It was heroic defending at times. But City, once again, had too much class. So now there's two games to go. It's Leicester at home. It's Brighton at home for Manchester City to win the league. It seems this is not a an attempt to jinx it, Simon. It seems as though it's just about over now. That was the big one, wasn't it, for City on the weekend?
Well, they're all big, aren't they? Yeah. You know, yes, it was, 2.55 millimetres. The ball was over the line, but an inch is as good as a mile. It was a goal. And, you know, as much as I'm against VAR, I've always been pro goal line technology. I think that's the one area of the game where we did need it. City overall, they played okay. It wasn't their best performance. It was a very slow pitch, which I think Burnley did intentionally, and that's fair enough. It's their home ground. Stop City's natural, quick, slick passing game. In fact, I think Raheem Sterling actually asked for the pitch to be watered at halftime. I think he probably got short shrift on that one. And it was nervy, you know. I mean, it shows just how tight and tense this title race is. And really, you know, when you consider that Liverpool or City, whoever wins it, the team that finishes second will get probably in excess of 95 points and not win it. I mean, that's ludicrous, really.
Yeah.
But City did what they had to do. And obviously, it remains in their hands. I'm sure the pro-Liverpool narrative now will shift towards Brendan Rodgers doing them a favour at the weekends for Leicester. But, you know, Liverpool have got two tough games as well. I think Newcastle away, obviously with another ex-Liverpool manager in Rafa Benitez. Wolves at home, even though their season's pretty much over, but they've had a good campaign. You know, both of those teams can do damage. Similar with Leicester. And, of course, Brighton could still need maybe a point or even more to stay up. So City's last game is a tricky one as well. I think it's going to go right down to the wire.
I think it'll come down to the wire. I think why City will win it, though, is because of the way that they play. I think when they revert back, when things aren't going well and you know, they revert back to what they know, what they do at that level is already so much better than all the other teams. You know, they don't panic and start hitting long balls. They don't start changing the way they play. Guardiola has embedded this philosophy, this style of play, so ingrained, and he's had the time to bring the players that he knows can execute it. I just think when times are tough and they have to fall back on what they know and how they go about playing the game is just on another level. Mm. And that's when they're at their worst. I mean, God forbid if they're at their best, it's 4-5-0. Forget it. Don't even try. I mean, when they played Man United the other week, you know, Man United, especially in that first half, were at the peak of their powers. They were doing everything possible, you know. And City just over time, you know, 60th, 70th, 80th, they just killed them. You know, and in the second half, you know, that Man U team actually couldn't do any more.
Yeah.
And that just shows you the benefit of having also a coach who's been in this situation many a time before, a successful coach, knows how to win. You know, a lot of teams in the past, to be this close, nerves, pressure, they start doing different things and it all crumbles and everyone wonders, oh, how did Liverpool pip this team? I don't think Man City have that issue.
Having said all that, Brucey, he did end up with about six centre halves on the pitch at the end of the game and playing the ball in the corner. But
well, you got to do what you got to do. But
yeah, exactly.
I mean, look, I think there's a chance, a very slim chance that that Liverpool can win it now. But we only have to look back to 2012. City played QPR at home. Okay, QPR was still in the relegation fight, and it came down to the final kick of the season. I mean, what if that chance doesn't fall to Aguero? Then City blow it at home, and their whole history changes. I know you don't want to, but that can't. You know, that kind of situation can still occur, and we only have to look back 7 years ago to remember that. So maybe, just maybe, the final day will still have a little twist in it. City and Liverpool, fittingly so, we've shared the Player of the Year trophies. Virgil van Dijk wins the PFA Player of the Year. Raheem Sterling wins the Football Writers Player of the Year. That's fitting, I think, considering the way the two teams have gone about it. Van Dijk, the first centre-back since John Terry in 2004-05 to win either award. He's just been a colossus, hasn't he?
He's been superb, and I just think, you know, everyone looks at the attacking players, you know, Salah, Hazard, Aguero, Sterling. So it's actually quite refreshing to have a centre-back win it. I mean, I saw a snapshot of some of his stats, you know, most successful passes, most interceptions.
I don't think anyone's dribbled past him once all season.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
That's scary. That's not one person has got past him.
That's unbelievable. That's a stat I didn't see, but if that's a fact, then that's just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. So, look,
we got past him when we beat you 2-1.
You didn't get past him.
But well done to him, and it just shows how amazing his season was to be a centre back winning that prestigious award.
Yeah, he's been incredible. I mean, I didn't think he'd have this big of an impact when Liverpool signed him for £75 million. But
well, remember there was the whole fiasco, right? Because he wanted to leave, and where was he? Southampton. They didn't want to let him leave, and that happened. I think he didn't go in that window.
Yeah,
he had to train alone for a period and all this sort of stuff. So it was well worth all the effort and heartache. I mean. Fantastic investment.
You know the biggest compliment really you can pay Jurgen Klopp is that City, of course, got 100 points last year, are almost going to have to match that to win the title this year. They've won, was it 12, 13 games straight, and are probably still going to have to win the last two because Liverpool have been so consistent, and Klopp's transfer acquisitions during the off-season has filled all those holes that were there last year. He's that absolutely superb business he did in the off-season.
Raheem Sterling's a wonderful story, I think, Football Writers Player of the Year. I mean, he's been so great on the field, but what he's done off the field, I think, deserves a lot of credit. And this is a kid who cops unnecessary crap, let's be honest, off the field. And he's risen above it to become a consistent player. Why he wins the Young Player of the Year award for the PFA is ridiculous. He's 24 and been playing in the Premier League for 7 years. I mean, that's just got to be changed, surely, because it should be 21 and under for mine. Anyway, what he's done, I think, is just wonderful as an ambassador for the game, never mind a brilliant footballer.
Absolutely. It's, you know, Sterling is one of those kids who I think sections of the British media took an instant dislike to him. He has, I was going to say an attitude, but that's wrong. It's just the way he is. I think it rubs people up the wrong way. In certain stratas of British society. You're right, he's risen above all that. He does a lot of very good work in the anti-racism campaign. He did things like paying for tickets for his old school children to go and attend the FA Cup semi-final. You know, he's obviously a much nicer guy than people give him credit for. And, you know, sometimes people, they look at the tattoo of the gun on his leg and think, what's he all about? And the fact that I think he has a hairdressing salon in his own home, you know, and think, oh, dude, this is just typical of the modern day footballer. But, you know, you've also got to give Guardiola a lot of credit because Sterling always had the ability, but he was so horribly inconsistent when he first came to City. Now he's probably the first name on the team sheet every week and scored, you know, a bucket load of goals this year and plays his part in the team effort as well. He's had a terrific campaign and richly deserves his award.
Most certainly. The top four race has been ridiculous. I mean, Stephen Bradbury be shaking his head at the way they're going about it. In nine days, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal and United have dropped a total of 27 points. Wow. City and Liverpool have dropped 33 between them all season.
Wow.
All season. They've dropped 27 in 9 days. And David De Gea has been a reason for United dropping off. I found this interesting, his form, which has fallen away. It reminded me of Shay Given at Newcastle. Remember how brilliant he was for a number of years there? I remember a game in like 2009, I think, Liverpool battered Newcastle. Shay Given was great for the first 20 minutes. And eventually the goals just flew in because he was getting no help from his teammates. A few months later, he left for Man City. De Gea reminds me of that. He's held this team up for so many years. Mm. He's carried them for so many years. They would have had a couple of mid-table finishes without him. I reckon he saved them 10 to 15 points a season a couple of times. And I reckon he's gone, you know what? Subconsciously, obviously, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep carrying this team. And now his own levels have dropped and he's making mistake after mistake.
Yeah, look, I don't know if... I don't know. I mean, he's obviously making a few howlers the last month. Solskjaer actually came out publicly and defended him, and then he repaid that with making another howler against Chelsea. But look, mate, and he's agitated for a move for a long time.
Yeah,
you know, and look, every goalkeeper. I don't know. I've never been a keeper, so I don't know if I'm the right guy to speak on this. But
maybe now's your chance, bro.
Yeah, well, every keeper has their moments, right? And he's obviously gone through a tough patch, and it's a very mental game. You know, goalkeepers aren't that involved on the ball all the time. So maybe it's difficult when your confidence is down. You know that all of a sudden you don't have the same faith in your hands to catch the ball, or do you start punching more, or is your positioning right? Are you covering that near post enough? And you start overthinking things. It's not happening natural for him anymore. I don't know if that could be an issue. But look... he wants to be getting back to that top form, especially if he wants a big money move. I mean, he's got good form. He's a good player. He's a top-class keeper, one of the best in the world. Mm. And it just shows everyone's human,
yep.
You know?
Simon, did you catch the Villa Leeds drama?
I did.
What did you think about that? That was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was carnage, wasn't it? For those who don't know, Villa had a player down injured, and normal protocol, of course, is that you kick the ball out, let him get attention. Leeds didn't do that, carried on up the field, scored, mayhem on the sidelines, Millie Jedinak involved as well, Dean Smith and Marcelo Bielsa going at it, hammer and tongs, and eventually Bielsa. And I think this is to his credit, to be honest. And he said afterwards, he said the reason he did it is that English football around the world is known for its nobility. I'm not quite sure about that these days. But anyway, historically, maybe that's the case. And he instructed his team to allow Villa to score. The interesting thing was Pontus Janssen, in particular, the Leeds defender, was not happy about that decision at all. Had to be restrained by his own teammates.
Yeah.
It was one of the most bizarre situations I've ever seen. And of course, that then meant that draw, as it ended up, allowed Sheffield United to join Norwich in the Premier League next season. They could well play each other again in the playoff final at Wembley. Wow, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, most certainly. Barcelona won the league. Their eighth in 11 years, 34 goals for Lionel Messi in 34 games, his 10th title. It was interesting because I saw that the margin was 9 points with 3 games to go. Goal difference is obviously a massive difference. I thought, why have they given them the title yet? They're not going to... I haven't won it mathematically, but it works differently in La Liga. It's head-to-head. And they've beaten Atletico once and drawn with them once. So even if Atletico win all 3 games and Barcelona lose all 3, Barca win the title. So it's a bit different in Spain. I found that interesting. You learn something new every day. Let's get into some of the Twitter questions. This is a good one from John, Simon. How's this for an idea? Play an annual friendly between the Socceroos and New Zealand on Anzac Day featuring A-League-based players.
100%. Yes. Next question.
I think it's a great one. You know, everyone has the ceremonies and we love them and they're brilliant. But wouldn't this separate us from the other codes a little bit to have an actual game?
Yeah, I think it'd be a fantastic initiative. I mean, you know, you give the A-League a break for that week and everyone can focus on the national team game against the New Zealanders. I think it'd be good. It'd be good to start that sort of a tradition. Up to the powers that be to see if it all works. Mm. But on the face of it, it looks like a good initiative to me.
Can I tweak that suggestion just ever so slightly?
Yeah.
Why don't we have a standalone FFA Cup final weekend with also an Australia-New Zealand international down in Canberra? So we have a proper celebration of football weekend with maybe a Matildas game as well, and have all football fans across the country make this pilgrimage to... you know, to go and watch the national teams and the cup final and have a touring museum down there with all the artefacts of the game's history.
Yeah, good suggestion. I think it'd be a wonderful one if it can come to fruition. That kind of draws a line through Tyler's question. The next one, at the end of the season after the grand final, should there be a further celebration of another successful campaign, an all-star match? I think that's great, but it's got to happen before the season or during the season. After the season, as Bruce said before, foreigners are looking to leave. People are winding things up. It's probably too hard to do after the campaign. Another one
didn't we say last week, Garby, the Dylan Tombidi Shield we should have?
Before the season.
Shield game, league champions against the all-stars.
Yeah. I think it'd be great. From Conrad, Marcus Babbel said in the interview after the game that I did with him, he knows what kind of players he needs in the A-League now. He said goodbye to Oriol Riera. He's told Alex Bamjohan. That was a bit weird on the weekend. Bamjohan said, my agent's coming here. We're going to discuss it. And then literally a minute later, Babbel's gone. He's gone. He's played his last game. I think Bamjohan probably knew. He just didn't really know what to say when the camera was on him. But how would you describe that type, Conrad wants to know? Well, Marcus Babbel said they've got to be hardworking players. I think he knows how good Bamjohan is. But if you can't work the other way and be defensively strong, then Marcus Babbel doesn't seem to want you.
That's right. And that's what you need in the A-League. He's come here. He's seen it. There's another one. You know, he's a guy with great pedigree. But when you're coming to a place that you don't have the experience of living in it and seeing it, you know, it's a year of learning. And he's learned that you need legs in the A-League. You play in the summer, you need to run. I mean, a perfect example of that was Marcelo Karuska. He came, and after that first year or so, he realised, you can't just be that typical Argentinian number 10. You've got to really work here.
Yeah.
And he did that. He adapted his game to be able to do that, to enable the high press on a 34-degree day.
Yeah.
And all the rest of it, to track his defensive midfielder if he had to, or whatever he needed to do. But you need to be able to run in this league. And then you need to find the players that are, yes, they're technically gifted and tactically very good and all the rest of it, but they can also track their runner. Mm. They can also make that third man running from the midfield, if we're talking about midfielders, in the 34-degree day with, you know, high humidity or very, very dry conditions, depending on where you play.
Yep. Simon, as the dishes get cleaned up around you, this final question. With Western Sydney returning to Parramatta Stadium and more Melbourne derbies through Western United joining, will season 15 set a record high average attendance for the A-League? And the highest average was season 3 with 14,610.
Well, look, let's hope so.
Yeah.
Because we need the league to be successful, and we know that we've had a tough few years. Next year is very, very important. The off-season is probably even more important. We need to get this independent A-League up and running. The club owners need to invest not only in their playing stocks, but in the infrastructure of the game to promote the game a lot better than it has been over the last 2 or 3 years. We're at a crucial juncture. We've got 3 years left of the TV deal with our employers, Fox Sports. We need to get some competitive tension in that market ahead of the next TV deal to drive this league forward. So, you know, it's incumbent upon all those who lead this game to get this right, because there may not be a second chance.
Yep, that question from Out Baller. We thank you for the contributions, all the questions that have come through. Simon Hill, thanks for joining us on the phone line. Have a safe flight to Perth. That's all right. Are you up the pointy end on a trip to Perth, mate?
No, sadly not.
Oh, cool. No.
Safe travels, mate. Don't worry.
Thanks, Bruce.
If anything goes wrong, it's the people at the pointy end who have problems, mate. So don't worry.
Travel safe. Enjoy the Glory Awards tonight. It'll be a celebration, no doubt, what a season they've had. Bruce Chatea, thanks for joining us on the podcast yet again.
Thanks for having me.
Love being on. Pal. Enjoy another day in retirement.
Cheers, mate. It's been good.
Congratulations.
It's a nice sunny day.
Great career, Bruce.
Thanks to everyone for listening.
Thanks to Phil Pryor for helping us out. Finals, Friday night, Victory Wellington. Sunday, Adelaide, Melbourne City. The ball cast back on Wednesday. They'll continue the build up to that one with Muzza, Harps and Speedy. Tune in for that. Thanks for your time today, though, on the Fox Football Podcast.